Good morning, Dr. Ross. I take it you're well on this Saturday morning.
Absolutely, Brent. Lovely to talk to you, mate.
And to you too. Let's start with a couple of listener questions. Susan says, could you please ask Dr. Ross, what are the main things I can do to change my approach to how I handle stress? I've tried breathing. I've tried focusing on something different or positive, but none of it seems to work for me.
I mean, look, it's the age-old question, isn't it? But I see stress like a garbage bin, and you put the garbage in, If you don't, get rid of the garbage and take it out a few times a week, then the garbage starts to spill over the side. And the problem with stress is a lot of it's to do with dose, and we all have a threshold that we can only put up with so much. And once we get over that threshold, that's when we start to feel the symptoms of stress, things like anxiety or depression or getting angry. And all those things we have to try and minimise, but the dose is important. And it doesn't matter whether you're Superman or not. Once you get to a certain level, it's when you've got a break. So the first thing I say to everyone is look at your life. What in your life is not serving you? What are you doing that you really don't have to do? And stop doing it. I mean, that's the first thing is prevention. So really examine if you're in a relationship that's not working for you. A lot of people are in loveless relationships where there's domestic violence and things like that, but they are financially hooked to that person, and they're too scared to walk away because they know if they walk away, they won't be able to financially support themselves. But the point is, Albert Einstein once said, there's nothing that's a more certain sign of insanity than to do the same thing over and over again and expect a different result. So nothing's going to change until that person either changes their situation, changes their attitude to the situation, or walks away. And they're your only choices in that situation. So I think, firstly, look at what you're doing. What can you do to change it to minimise the stress? That's the first thing. Secondly, in terms of there's good behaviours and there's bad behaviours. So the bad behaviours are to allow yourself to have emotional symptoms over it, to be jealous, to be negative. All of these things drag you down. The positive behaviours are to manage your time properly. So people say to me, Doc, I haven't had a holiday for 10 years. I go, well, you're an idiot. Yeah, people need time away. People need time away on the weekends. You need time away every day just to relax. I spend a half an hour every day meditating. I could imagine a life without meditation. That's one thing. Half an hour exercise, that's another great stress reliever as well. So having a regular exercise habit, something I strive. And also trying to get good quality sleep, which people don't do. So the five keys of being healthy, I talk about all the time, certainly helps your stresses. And also setting goals in your life and having tangible goals that you can achieve. Very, very important. I think humour is fun. Laughter is the best medicine. Having a great sense of humour. And having time away from things. So for example, I have a massage once a week because I've got a crappy neck and a crappy back, and I get that worked on once a week. So all of that can help. There's no magic solution to stress if you don't change what's stressing you in the first place.
What if you're in a situation where we've just done a renovation, all right, and my goodness me, the stress that you go through in reference to doing a renovation, but I find speaking to other people that have gone through similar things in reference to building and renovating and all those sort of things, they have exactly the same sort of problems. How do you get that sort of mindset out of your mind?
I don't think you can. I mean, if you're building a house and you're going through all these stresses and the builders aren't living up to your expectations, which isn't always the case. But if it is the case in your situation, you've just got to get the house built and get out of there. You just get into the house and get the builders out as quickly as possible. It's not always the builder's fault, but it's just it's just one of the stresses people take on in this world, and there's not much you can do about it. I wish there was some magic. There is no magic for that situation. Look, I say it all the time on my show, and I say to you, happiness is the best drug on the planet. But I've had people ring my show and say, look, I've got a disabled child. I've got a chronic illness myself. I'm by myself. My husband left me 10 years ago. How on earth can I be happy? And I get that. I mean, there's no magic solution to that. Yes. And some people are in dreadful situations where they just need as much support and utilising the supports they do have as much as they can. I saw a woman yesterday in my practice whose husband is developing dementia. And she's incredibly stressed. And I just said to her, look, the only thing you can do, you can't walk away because he needs you. The only thing you can do is make sure you get some time, some respite time for yourself every week to go and see your friends. He's still well enough to stay at home by himself. So go and see your friends, have time away, do the things you enjoy doing. But there's, look, mate, I wish there was a magic solution. Tragically, there is none.
Brad says, I have high blood pressure. He says, are these blood pressure cups you buy from a chemist, are they worth the money, and how accurate are they?
Yeah, no, I think they're pretty good. And I say to my patients, look, I'm much more interested in what reading you get on your blood pressure cuff than what I get when you're in a doctor's office, because there's that old white coat hypertension or stress-induced hypertension. So don't ever check your blood pressure within 5 seconds of having a screaming argument with your next-door neighbour. What I say to people is never check it first thing in the morning. Wait a few hours after you've taken your pills, if you're on pills, and then sit quietly in a room by yourself for 5 minutes. And the machines these days are pretty accurate, and it gives you a good indication of what your blood pressure is. And the aim should be a blood pressure sitting around 120 over 80.
How often should one take their blood pressure?
That's a great question. I've got patients who check their blood pressure 4 times a day, and I tell them to get a life. I mean, it's just been completely neurotic to do that. I've got patients wake up at 2 a.m, don't feel well, check their blood pressure. I mean, that's just crazy. So I say to people, maybe once or twice a week at the very most, at different times, and probably for most of us, we want to know what our blood pressure is doing every month or so. If we're over the age of 50, younger people shouldn't bother unless there's a strong family history of hypertension or they're feeling symptoms like fullness in the head or a headache or nosebleeds or things like that. But for those of us over 50, you want to know what your blood pressure is every month or so, just to make sure it's staying around 120 over 80.
65 years of age, a blood pressure of 125 over 77. Is that okay?
No, that's fantastic. Perfect.
We have talked about eating ultra-processed foods before. You don't have to be Einstein, Ross, to realise that if you eat too much of this gunk, it's not good for you. But surveys and research tell us that a diet heavy in ultra-processed foods may increase the risk of mortality by as much as 10%.
Yeah, and this is just something that really it reinforces what we already know. So people who have a lot of things like hot dogs, sausages, deli meats, anything out of a container that can sit in a container in a thickened, hardened state with a use-by date. These are all the ultra-processed foods. So this was nearly a 23-year study of 500,000 people showing clearly that the more ultra-processed foods you have, the more your death risk. And the death risk is 10%, but still, 10% is still a lot of people. And purely something you can do something about, eat more natural food. So really the bottom line here is eat less food, eat more natural food.
Eat less food, eat more natural food. I think that's one of the big problems that we have as being a society of overweight people. We put too much food on the plate and somehow, even though we don't need it, we finish the food that's on the plate, probably because, you know, the wife or husband's cooked it, they put it on the plate, so you eat it, because you don't feel like sending it back.
Yep, absolutely. So I just think we've got to eat off smaller plates, don't have second helpings, and just eat less food. It's obvious stuff, and doctors and people like me, so doctors, nutritionists, whatever, we say this all the time, and it just seems to fall on deaf ears.
I had someone ask me a question the other day as a result of listening to our interview each and every Saturday. They said, you always say about soft drinks. They asked about tonic water. Is tonic water a soft drink? I said, yes, it is. They said, is tonic water as bad as having a Coca-Cola or something like that?
So it really just depends on how much you have. I mean, to do it occasionally is not going to hurt anyone. But if you had a daily GNT, that's going to cause you issues.
I was hoping you were going to say, but a daily GNT is good for you. It probably is if it relaxes you.
Well, if you were in the British Raj sitting there on your veranda during dusk, it would certainly stop you from getting malaria, which is why they used to do it, because the quinine in the tonic water is anti-malarial.
Let's talk pomegranates. Researchers say that pomegranates could offer a solution to fatty liver disease. Blokes probably over the age of 50 that don't have a sufficient diet, you know, eat enough vegetables and fruit and all those sort of things and have too much meat, maybe too many carbs, maybe too many glasses of wine. It's nothing to go to the doctor and he said, look, you've got fatty liver disease.
Mm. Oh, mate, it's not just that. The problem is 2015... 25% of the adult population were diagnosed with fatty liver disease. In 2021, it had gone up to 29%. Fatty liver disease is very much associated with the insulin resistance, metabolic syndrome, pre-diabetes, we're talking about as well. So if you've got fat in the belly, you can often have fat in the liver as well. In fact, there are some people who don't appear to have much in the way of abdominal fat who still have fatty liver disease. And the reality is there's not much we can do for fatty liver at this stage. Now, let me say, however, that I published with my colleagues in Italy a paper in the Journal of Clinical Lipidology a few years ago showing that the bergamot products that I've been talking about for years do have a beneficial effect in reducing fatty liver disease. But this paper done at the Edith Cowan University in Perth showed that there's a compound called ellagic acid, which is present especially in pomegranates, in raspberries, in blueberries, in pecan nuts, that have been shown to significantly reverse fatty liver disease as well. So we're talking about some very good natural products that can help reduce fatty liver disease, because there are no medical therapies that appear to be effective apart from something you and I have spoken a bit about in the last year or so, the wonder drug Ozempic and all of its spin-offs, because the Ozempic takes fat out of every part of the body, not just out of the abdominal fat, but also takes fat out of the heart. A lot of work to show that Ozempic and its friends can reduce heart disease risk by about 20%, potential for some cancer reduction as well. So I suspect we'll find out that Ozempic works for fatty liver disease. But let's face it, if you can take natural stuff and it works, it's so much better for you.
So have a glass of pomegranate juice every day.
Oh, absolutely. And pomegranate juice is also extremely good for your blood pressure.
Now, flu-monia, it's something I've never heard of before, but there's so many flus and bugs around at the moment. Apparently, yep. Ross, there's now this thing called flu-monia. What's that?
Yeah. Well, flu-monia is just the term that's been given to this viral soup that we've had really emerge around Australia just in the last week or so in New South Wales. The rates of the big five, apart from one, which I'll talk about, have gone through the roof. So, for example, there's this thing you may have heard of called walking pneumonia, which is really just a Reader's Digest term for a bug called mycoplasma pneumonia. And so people, they call it walking pneumonia because you're not dreadfully ill with it. You can still walk around, but you've got a cough and you're short of breath. And mycoplasma pneumonia is a bacterial illness caused by this atypical bacteria, mycoplasma pneumoniae, and it can be treated with antibiotics. So that's where that one works, but we're seeing a marked increase in this mycoplasma pneumonia. Then there's also standard influenza. There's been a 30% increase in the last week in reported influenza cases. So when we say reported cases, there are many cases that are not reported. So you can imagine how much influenza there is around at the moment. When they're still rearing its ugly head is good old COVID, which I had personally 2 weeks ago, and a lot of my friends have had this latest variant of COVID. Knocked us around for a few days, but we're all getting better from it. And then there's whooping cough. Now, you wouldn't think whooping cough would be going nuts, but it's quadrupled in the last 4 months. So whooping cough's a big issue. And unfortunately, because there's still that branch of anti-vaxxers out there that are making out that vaccination's the worst thing that's happened to the world, people not being vaccinated for whooping cough, even little kids are getting it, and it can be lethal in children. And then finally, the only thing that isn't going through the roof is this respiratory syncytial virus, RSV, which is starting to drop off a bit. You can be vaccinated against RSV. It's pretty expensive. It's not covered by the PBS, but it is there for people who are very vulnerable to things like this, little children. It's certainly adults over the age of 70 especially.
I was talking to someone only today, and they were going to get some blood tests, and they were saying they were sitting in the waiting room, and the girl on the phone was asking people if they've had the latest COVID vaccination in reference to being able to come into the surgery.
Yeah, I think that's going a bit over the top, but there are still a lot of general practices, and you've got to feel for the general practices because they're the ones that get exposed to people who are very ill. So in my practice as a cardiologist, people don't come in because they're sick. They say, oh, no, I'm sick, I can't come in today, doctor, which is fine, but I don't get exposed to that sort of viral soup as much as these other people do. I got my COVID. We went out to dinner with friends of ours a couple of weeks ago, and she texted us the next day and said, "I've just tested positive for COVID." Oh, thanks for that.
I hope you enjoyed your dinner.
Yeah, it was a lovely dinner until the next day.
As always, we enjoy our chat with you. Thank you so much. Enjoy the rest of your weekend.
Good on you, mate. Lovely to talk to you. Talk to you next week.